Coast to coast on the World Wide Web, this is Trot Radio on standardbredcanada.ca. Nuremberg here with you. Before we go any further, first things first, by the time you hear this, it'll probably be near or on Remembrance Day. Take the time to thank a vet, all right? Big weekend here. We've got the Ontario Sire Stakes Superfinals going on at Woodbine. It's also the Trot Canadian National Handicapping Challenge going on this weekend as well. And it's shaping up to be a very busy and fun 48-hour period in this game that we love. We'll have more on that on this edition of Trot Radio. Welcome back to Trot Radio. Being a handicapper and one who is glad he doesn't try to do it for a living, I'm always impressed by people like my following guest. He is in the Trot Canada National Handicapping Championship. Not only is he a horse player, he's a horse owner, and he joins us on today's edition of Trot Radio, John Ruffo. Welcome.
Thank you, Norm.
Let me ask something. When you're not making money at the track, which is almost like an oxymoron, what do you do for a primary occupation?
I'm in commercial real estate.
Okay.
Sports farms and stuff like that.
So you're used to high risk, high reward.
I would think so.
Yeah. Now, how did horse ownership and harness racing come into your life? Was it a lifelong thing? Were you taken to the track as a kid? How did that work for you?
Well, what happened years ago was my buddy and myself, he split up with his girlfriend. We were kids then, and he broke up with his girlfriend, and he decided to go to the track and be a groom. A year later, he calls me. He says, John, I need $1,200 to buy a horse. And that was in 1971-72. I was just a kid then. And just fresh out of school, I said, okay, go ahead. And that's how I got in the horse business.
That is probably one of the wackiest ways to get into the horse game I've ever heard of. That is beautiful. That's right out of a Damon Runyon book.
Well, that was back in the old Greenwood days, and from there I just was always had my fingers in there, breeding and, you know, so on. So.
Yeah. How much racing do you watch a week, and where do you watch it from? Do you like to watch it live as opposed to in a simulcast bar? What's your preference?
You know, I do a bit of both, mm-hmm. Even online when my wife's on my case.
We do have to have patient wives, don't we?
Yeah,
it helps. As for wagering, would you consider yourself a moderate horse player? I'm not expecting you to divulge your how much you spend, but would you consider yourself moderate, light?
I'd probably be a moderate player.
Yeah, I'm just going to take a shot here. What would be the most you'd chunk down on a given race?
Well, I'd probably be on one of my own horses, probably around $600.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah, that's cigarette money for me.
Thank God I don't smoke.
Thank God I quit. Okay, now you're the last qualifier for the TCNHC. You picked 6 of 8 winners when handicapping tracks across Canada. Are there favorite tracks you like to wager on?
Pretty well, our local ones like Woodbine, Mohawk, you know, Georgian, Western Fair, Flamborough. I like the local tracks.
Yeah, yeah. What's the biggest ticket you ever cashed?
Well, it would probably be back again at the Greenwood days. I had a pick six with 3 other guys, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was
$115,000.
Oh, yeah, but we only spent $24 each.
Well, that's a good return on investment.
Yeah, well, that was years ago. I'd say probably in the 80s.
But still, that's one hell of a return. You hear a lot of horse people talking about takeout and value, so obviously you like to seek the value-added bets, don't you?
Well, I'll put it this way. A lot of times, I don't bet every race. I mean,
you can't.
No, I mean, if there's something I like or something I saw the previous week, a horse was in trouble, or you can see they're just racing them home, or, you know, mm-hmm. Depends. Like, a lot of times, just weather conditions dictate, you know, like,
yeah.
I guess I have my own formula, you know, like in the warm weather, I like betting the Angus Halls and Trots, or the Yankee Glides, or, you know, in the colder weather, I stick to the I stay away from the Ingersolls, let's say, and the Yankee guys, because they don't seem to handle the cold as well. So there's different strategies I use, you know.
That's one I've never considered, and it makes sense. I mean, according to it's pedigree handicapping, really, and it takes it to another level. Do you have a favorite betting story? We heard about your big win. What about the one that got away? How big would that have been?
It would have been a Mohawk, I guess, back in the 90s. There, I had three horses going with two other guys in the pick six, and was 185,000, and two of the horses broke in the last leg, and the other one finished last. A week later, two of the three win the following week. And I remember Dave Wall being with a horse called Terra something or other, and it paid 180 some odd thousand.
Oh, winner. You got beat out by Wally.
Yeah.
Oh, my. You know, just as an aside, I don't know, I'm not going to try and cause some. Oh, yeah, I am. Why is Dave Wall not in the Hall of Fame? I would like to know.
I have no idea.
That's just crazy.
I mean, there's so many pioneers, I guess, you know, like the Jack Herbert.
Sure.
You know, like Joe Bryan's. And,
I get
you know,
that.
Like, all the way down the line there, but who knows? I mean, I guess because he's still around and he's still driving. So.
Yeah, I guess so, but hopefully sooner than later we'll see Wally out there, because he's really one of the good guys and deserving. Don't want to get too far off track. When you have a narrow miss like that, My strategy to try and keep my head level is to say, you know, for example, let's say I bet an exacta and it's split in the middle. And I've had for the past 3 days, that it's happened about 10 times. I tell myself, well, you know what? I'm picking the right horses. Just a game of inches. What do you tell yourself when things are just burning your keister?
Well, what can you tell yourself? You just shake your head and, I just bite my tongue more than anything, you know. I, like inside, it's killing you. But like take even yesterday, I bet a 20-cent super, and the thing pays $3,200 for a dollar. You know, so I bet a 20-cent super.
Yeah.
I leave the favorite out for fourth, and the favorite ends up fourth. For second and third. So an extra dollar, and I don't even think it was even that much.
Yeah,
and it cost me basically $600-$700.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That happened to me at Woodbine at the Runners the other day. For an extra 40 cents, I wouldn't throw one more horse in who was the favorite, and I wanted to put him at the bottom of my ticket. I thought, nah. Guess what? Favorite came in fourth.
Exactly.
I can relate. What's your strategy going to be heading into the tournament?
Oh, I have no idea. I don't know what the you know what, if the horse's front speed holds up, they come off the pace, you just have to, you know, you got to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been doing it for years, so it's not nothing new, just like going, making another night at the races, you know, except this time I'll have my wife with me and my kids when I come, so.
Oh, well, yeah, when there's 25 G's on the line, go,
oh,
Dad,
yeah,
go.
They're already counting on it, you know. They said, well, we're going away, you know that, eh?
Yeah, so we now know what you're going to do with the 25K if you win it. I want to talk about the game itself, because you are a horse owner, and you know, you're watching as we as an industry try and resuscitate what's going on. You do come from those two perspectives. If you were in charge of selling racing as a product, what aspect would you concentrate on most?
I enjoy the grassroots, the family-oriented thing. You still got to bring in, like, the new fresh blood, like with the casinos, and, you know, now they're coming with the bookmaking and everything else, you know, like, it makes it harder. They got to make it more of a where they can bring the family. Like personally, if say I own one of the tracks, and like a lot of times Saturday afternoons, Sunday afternoons, parents have nothing to do, and the kids, you know, so they don't want to go to the races. Do a play area for the kids, or a picnic area where they can have fun, or inside, like McDonald's has, a play area where the kids can, and the parents don't have to worry, or even put a babysitting in there where the parents are probably happy to pay $10 to somebody look at.
Oh, yeah. And let's face it, what kid doesn't like looking at a horse up close?
Exactly. I mean, I don't enjoy going to Woodbine anymore because of the action so far. I love Mohawk.
Oh, yeah.
Flamborough. I love Western. I love Georgian, you know.
Well, I grew up on Western Fair, and the reason I think I was most hooked on horse racing was because you were so close to the action. You're right
exactly.
there, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're onto something.
Yeah, I think the family, it's always been family-oriented and, you know, like, basically homegrown product as compared to the commercial end of like the mm-hmm. thoroughbreds and
yeah.
now it's big bucks and big games.
Yeah, but the game's shrinking and we've got to reinvent that kind of family-oriented grassroots, if I can use the term, kind of atmosphere. They're working on it. It's going to take time. In the meantime, we're glad to have solid supporters like yourself, John Ruffo. Good luck heading into the handicapping tournament and tell your family that you've got some plans for that 25K of your own.
Okay, man.
Pleasure having you here.
Thank you very much.